Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Well, hello, NAMBA members. This is Toby Milroy, and today our special guest on the line with us is Master Sam Scott. And Master Scott has, you know, an incredible martial arts resume that we wanted to talk quite a bit about today. And he's also one of our Elite Inner Circle members and has been operating very successful businesses for many years. And I just wanted to give you a quick sort of a thumbnail of just a very few of the bullet points of Master Scott's martial arts background. He began studying martial arts in 1976. He's a former corrections officer and part of the emergency response team. And he was one of these, you know, tactical guys, right? So he's got some real life experience using, martial arts and self-protection in the real world, in a world where many martial arts school owners have really never had to tread, which is very useful for our purposes today. He was a nationally ranked fighter with over 300 matches. He was a gold medal winner in 1992 in the International Police Olympics. We actually have a sort of a common thread. He's a regional representative of Amaguru Rafi Pambuan, who's a Pambuan Arnith stylist founder, who's also an associate of mine. I've done a bunch of training with Rafi. He's a fantastic individual. Master Scott was also voted to the Black Belt Hall of Fame as the Instructor of the Year in 1996, and just the list goes on and on and on. So, Master Scott, thank you so much for taking your time today and joining our NAMBA members.
Thank you for having me, Toby. Great to be here.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate it. And we just wrapped up a couple of weeks ago our latest Inner Circle meeting, and we'll probably want to talk a little bit about that as we get through this part of the call today. And sort of maybe share any big ahas that you had or any big breakthroughs that we're going to be implementing in schools over the next 12 months. But let's talk a little bit about the past first. Obviously, you have a very illustrious martial arts career and a very serious martial arts background. And one thing I think that's useful for all of our school owners on the call is that you're sort of an eclectic stylist. You're teaching. Tell us a little bit about what you're teaching in your martial arts schools.
Well, we have the traditional Kung Fu, which is the Ten Chin Pai system. My partner, Master Wallace Powell, teaches that. My focus, Toby, has always been on reality-based martial arts for the sake of self-defense. Being born and raised in New York, the first priority was learning how to protect yourself so you can get on the school bus and then get off the school bus. So what I teach is a system called Talihip Kung Tao, which is a mixture of Indonesian, Silat, Kung Tao, and Filipino martial arts. And it makes for a reality-based self-defense system. And it's very popular with adults. We actually have probably over 65 adults in that program right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, obviously there's a few reasons that that's important to me if I'm an NAMBA member and I'm listening right now. Reason number one is that it's very, very important that – let me take a different tack. It's very easy – for a small business owner of any type, and martial arts school owners are no exception, it's very easy for us as business owners to fall into the pattern or to fall into the misunderstanding that your business is different or that your style is different or that
right.
your demographic is different or that your location is different or, you know, all of these factors. When in reality, you know, we can point to martial arts school owners like you who are teaching very eclectic styles, very different than the traditional, you know, taekwondo stylist or the traditional karate stylist. And these universal business principles apply regardless of the style.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter if you're teaching Thai boxing or if you're teaching Tai Chi. I mean the business principles are all the same here. So I think this is going to be a very instructive day for us, especially if I perhaps do not teach what many would consider to be the core styles in the U.S., the taekwondo or the karate or, you know, those types of things. So I think this is going to be useful for us. So so you have a very high population of adult students in your school, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how does this sort of matriculate, this sort of eclectic style being very reality-based and being very, you know, I hate to use the phrase, you know, hardcore, but it's very much reality-based, right? It's very much self-defense-based. How does that matriculate itself down to your juniors classes, your kids classes, your teens classes, and then how does that work its way through the adult ranks? How do you make all that curriculum kind of work?
Well, this program is kind of strictly for the teenagers, teens and adults. But believe it or not, I incorporate a little scaled-down version into our Black Belt Club. So you may have seen just a small bit of the leg check takedowns that we were doing on the NAPMA series, DVD series a couple of months ago. But we kind of keep it more with the teenagers and adults. And I tell you what, you know, I just kind of hate to say it, but self-defense is always going to be in business, you know, because just the times we're living in and people are becoming more aware of the fact that they really need to learn how to protect themselves. So we actually are doing extremely well right now, especially with women's safety programs, and it kind of ties in. So we do like maybe a two-week women's safety workshop, and then we kind of filter them right into our street combat program.
Yeah, that's a huge point. Maybe we should, you know, get into some details on that. Now, what unfortunately a lot of martial arts school owners do is they do these little extra seminars and things like that, and extra little like weekend programs or week-long programs or whatever. You know, a good example of this would be sort of like the cardio kickboxing trend, right?
Right.
And we all know the cardio kickboxing trend, although it was extremely hot and extremely, I mean, it was on every television channel that you could find, right? Much like mixed martial arts is now. It was everywhere you looked. Billy Blanks was everywhere. But ultimately what happened was the marginal value of that customer, of a kickboxing customer at the time, cardio kickboxing client, you know, was just like in the gym, just like in a health club or a YMCA, where they would come in and they would train for maybe 30 days, 45 days, and then they'd pretty much be gone. And many martial arts school owners who had very solid traditional martial arts programs sort of overlaid this cardio kickboxing thing, and it really hurt their school because now instead of attracting a student into their program who's going to be there for a year, 2 years, 3 years, or 4 years, now they're attracting students who are going to be in the program for 30 days. So, see, you've cracked the code on this. You have a very sophisticated understanding of how this thing really works. You're using this self-protection program or this women's self-defense program as a feeder for your core program, right? And
exactly.
See, that's where the real value of the student is. So maybe you can describe that a little bit. How does that work? How are you marketing that program to bring in the students? And then once they're in the thing, how do you move them over into your regular program?
Absolutely. From the women's safety perspective, what we're doing is we're using the landing page concept, of course, that you all had talked about in Inner Circle. And we're taking we're putting postcards out, and we're putting it through the merchandise and newspaper out here, which is a circular that goes out to about maybe 20,000, 30,000 homes. And then we put the website address to the particular women's safety program, and it kind of hits them with all the bells and whistles and kind of tugs on their emotions, and it's free. And we just tell them basically the name and email address, or click here to register, and then they come in, they register, and from the time we get them into school, then it's all about just relationship building. You know, we're not there hammering them about signing up, we're just there educating them about safety. And we have handouts for them, and we have the talks with them, and we pull all the stats around the area. Because here's the thing, Toby, a lot of the crime that takes place in the neighborhoods never make it to news.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we go in and we pull the blotter out of the newspaper, or you know, I contact some of my friends in the police department, and they pass down this information to me. So once you start showing people that there's crime going on right in the neighborhood or right around the corner from the house, it kind of hits home for them. So once we get them in that environment and we're talking to them for a week or two, and we're bringing home the importance of taking a few minutes out of their week to learn how to protect themselves, they start getting it. And then the key is we have women come in that are doing it that look just like them, you know, not hardcore women doing martial arts, but, you know, average, typical woman that you see dressed up, you wouldn't have any idea they were martial artists. So they come in and do a demonstration, and after that, Toby, they're pretty much hooked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said a whole mouthful there. You just in 5 seconds probably did about 3 years of high level marketing training experience right there. So let's go back and kind of break that down into its component parts. And I think you or I maybe were breaking up just a little bit there. So it might be useful to reiterate some of this. So here was your marketing strategy. You knew that you wanted to do a women's self-defense course, and you
right.
knew that once you had a group of women in your school that you could build enough relationship with them that you could enroll a bunch of them into your regular program.
Exactly.
So you were marketing it from offline and online sources, driving them to a web page where they would request this free class.
Exactly.
And you had 4 or 5 different little techniques that you were using there that are really, really, really useful, and I want to make sure no one misses it. Number one was you were doing display ads in a circular paper, right?
Right.
That drove them to the web page. What would that display ad say, do you think?
Basically, it says free women's safety workshop. Mm-hmm. Then it has a date and time, and of course the call to action, and the telephone number with website.
Yeah. So it was very much blind, and what we mean by blind is, see, the fundamental marketing principle that you've identified here is speaking to the market in the language the market will respond to rather than the language that we're used to speaking in, right? So what that basically is you didn't mention anything about martial arts. You didn't mention anything about karate. You didn't mention anything about stun gun, anything like that, right?
What
you did was you identified a problem. You identified a problem or a benefit that someone wants, and that was the message to the market. So you did a blind lead generation ad, right? So it didn't have anything to do with your, 300 fights or your gold
right.
medals or any of that stuff. Right?
Right.
So many of our martial arts brethren, unfortunately, it's egocentric. They get sort of egocentric into that deal, and they talk all about them and their style and all that stuff, and that's irrelevant to the market. The market wants to solve a problem.
Right.
And God rest his soul, we just lost Billy Mays. Who actually lives over in Tampa by the NAMA office. He's not far from where NAMA is at. And Billy Mays, he has that show, The Pitch Man, and he's the infomercial guy. He sells OxyClean and stuff like that.
Exactly.
And I'll tell you something interesting. I think we may have even mentioned this at the Inner Circle meeting, but I'll tell you something that's interesting is when Billy Mays is going through the selection process of selecting products that he's going to try to sell on television, it takes a lot. It takes a lot of talent to be able to get somebody that's watching television to go over to their purse, pull out their credit card, walk over to the telephone, dial the phone number, and order something online. So his major criteria for selecting products are this product has to solve a problem that someone is excited and willing to fix, right? They have to be willing to go over to the phone and dial these numbers to fix this problem.
Right.
So this is exactly what you're doing. So let's go back again. So your marketing strategy was offline print blind lead generation ads in a circular paper. So I think many people have dailies and Penny Saver, those types of papers are kind of what you're referring to, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so you were hitting a broad base of a lot of homes very inexpensively with a little lead generation ad that now leads to a web page. Now, the web page has to be, well done. The web page has to be a cleverly crafted, direct response-ish lead generator. So it's going to collect information. It's going to offer them something of value to be able to collect the lead, right?
Exactly.
And I'm assuming that once you collect the information, then they're landing on a page where they can actually preserve their position in the class. Does that sound about
exactly.
right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Cool. So again, if I'm your average martial arts school owner out there, this is all probably brand new revolutionary thinking for me, but this is a staple. This is something that is extremely successful in the kids market. It's extremely successful in the women's self-defense market. It's extremely successful in virtually every market. So let me do just 5 seconds of translation. Think about that system, in column print or display ads or whatever they are, driving to the site converts to a seminar. Well, think about how you could do that for kids. What about a children's, concentration course for back to school? Or a children's focus course for children with ADHD, or there's all sorts of ways to make that marketing strategy work. So that's very clever. Now the second piece of that you said was really important, and maybe you could describe this again, is that you go into some database that's available in your area, and you market by email and I'm sure by other media, by direct mail and in these newspaper ads, with geo-targeted crime statistics, right? So maybe describe that to me again. How does that work, and how do you pull the list, and what are you looking for?
Okay, well, basically, like I said, in terms of getting the crime statistics, I either go to – they have this newspaper out here that puts out a police blotter. So I go to the police blotter and pull down the information of that. Then I have friends in the law enforcement that actually, you know, gives me a list of crime that's happening in the area. But as far as getting a list for the people, I go to Sales Leads, salesleads.com,
mm-hmm.
and Sales Genie, I'm sorry, and do pull down the names for the maybe 18 to about 45 in terms of age in this geographical location. So within about an 8-mile radius,
mm-hmm.
I get about maybe 2,000 names.
Mm-hmm.
And then we send postcards out to them. But I tell you what really works too, Toby, I don't think I mentioned this, is actually I get a team of guys together,
mm-hmm.
and we I get some T-shirts and I put, you know, women's safety ambassador on the
mm-hmm.
back of it. And we go out and we go pass out postcards face to face. And we basically tell them, say, look, you know, we're out in the neighborhood. There's been recent crime in the area. You heard about X amount of crime that's been happening. And, you know, we'd like to invite you out to a free workshop. It's, you know, and one of the things we make sure we say to them that it's a community service, no requirement to continue,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that kind of relaxes them right there. Because all you want to do is get them in the door. That's it. Once they get in the door and they feel the warmth of the place and the warmth of the people and see what we have, they're in the program. So we make sure they know that, you know, we're not trying to sell you. We're here to help you. So that is real popular. So I don't know if I mentioned that earlier, but I want to make sure that people know about that. That face-to-face piece is really important because, you know, they see you out, they see that you care, they're looking at your body language, and they see that you, you know, you care about their safety.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, it is a little bit of a tangent, but it's hugely important to understand that media is media. And it doesn't matter what the media is, if it's newspaper, if it's direct mail, if it's even voice broadcasting, if it's fax, if it's television, if it's radio, media is media.
Right.
And your goal in any media is to try to create a relationship.
Right.
Now, it's very difficult and takes a very high level of skill and a very high level of copywriting efficacy and of personality and of all these things in your ads to create a relationship quickly. However, if you're looking someone in the eyes, right, you know, one of the requirements, Sam, that we have for all of our staff members is they have to go through Tom Hopkins, How to Master the Art of Selling Anything, right?
Oh.
And it's a really good program, and I mean, it's a really good program. And one of the lessons in How to Master the Art of Selling Anything is how to, you know, double your sales is just go meet twice as many people, right?
Right.
And he draws a picture on the board of a circle with two kind of curved lines in it with two dots. And what it is getting belly to belly with more people will create more sales, right?
Exactly.
Because you have an opportunity to make a personal relationship with someone. And like you said, you know, again, you did three or four things intrinsically here that some people really need to think about. But number one is you know when you go meet somebody face to face, number one, they're kind of skeptical. Because they think you're trying to sell them something,
right?
Right? So you immediately in the phraseology and the scripting of what your people say is, hey, this is a free community service. There's no obligation. We're concerned. We know that there have been, you know, 6 abduction attempts in the last, you know, 3 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever it is in this geographic area, and we're mad. We're sick of it. We can do something about this,
right.
And we want to help you. So that's brilliant. You also mentioned salesgenie.com. We've been using those guys forever. That actually scrubs the InfoUSA, or I'm sorry, searches the InfoUSA database, who I believe InfoUSA is like the number 2 or number 3 largest list broker in the United States. So what you can do on SalesGenie or just straight through InfoUSA, and in fact you can do it, in fact this may make it even easier for people, on NatList print-on-demand service. If you go into your member section and you go to the little print on demand icon, that you can pull the list down from there as well that you want to mail postcards to. So you can select the postcard, customize the postcard, and have it mailed straight to the list. But what you're able to do on these types of services is define exactly your market, right? So if I don't know what this is a pretty big aha, is you can go to Sales Genie, like I said, and you can pull down the list of single women who are, you know, 19 to 35 or whatever age group you want, who either do or do not have children, whichever market you're looking for, who are not married, who live in their own home, who own their own home, you know, that type of thing. And you can pull that list down by a lot of targeted criteria that are pretty valuable. So you're doing direct mail by that, you're doing email, you're doing in-column blind ads, and you're going belly-to-belly with flyers and postcards and things like that. So it does take some effort to be able to get traffic to these websites, but very sophisticated approach. Now, the next thing I think that martial arts school owners struggle with is, and it's what they shouldn't struggle with, it's what we're really good at. What we're really good at as martial arts instructors is being leaders, right? It's getting in front of a group of people and motivating them and then getting them excited and getting them motivated to become a better person. But then I think, unfortunately, what happens is we stop short. We
right.
stop short of asking for the sale. We stop short of asking for them to continue the training or ask them if they think they would benefit from continuing the training. So maybe you could go through that. Once I drive a bunch of traffic to the website, a bunch of people request a free course, they all come in on a Friday or a Saturday or whatever the case may be, how are you converting them then into students in your regular program?
Well, basically when the course is finished, we give them a special offer. We tell, you know, we make sure we stay true to what we said in terms of no obligation to continue. So what we say to them, we say, well, basically, this concludes the program. However, for those of you who see the value in this training and have a serious concern for their safety and the safety of their loved ones, we do have a special program available, and we then slide them into our six-week program. So we don't hit them with a big one-year commitment
mm-hmm.
or anything
mm-hmm.
like that. Still kind of soft-selling them to try the six-week program because mm-hmm. one of the things we say, you know, what you learned here today is just a fraction of what you can learn in a period of 90 days or 6 months. We say, but we would like to have you start out in our six-week program. And, you know, we scale it down, the price down, so, you know, it's affordable to get them in the door. And once they get in the door, around the second week into that program, we start talking to them about actually joining the program. And we have about a 20% conversion, 20-25% conversion, so it's not bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, again, you did the two things that you have to do. And this is kind of, again, what some people sort of, they kind of shy away from. And what you said is right. You made them a promise. You told them that there was no obligation to continue. And you certainly don't want to violate that sense of trust that you just built with that person, because even if they do say yes, they'll hold it against you forever, right?
Exactly.
Which is, I think, it's a very common mistake to be too aggressive. Well, I think the more common mistake is not to be aggressive at all.
Right.
Is to in fact have, in fact, this is, you know, I got to tell you, we have on the Mile High Karate side of the fence, we have a bunch of new franchisees. And we one of the primary focuses when we bring a new franchisee into the system is that we go out and we drive a ton of new leads for them. And in many cases, they aren't equipped to handle the flow of new leads, right?
Right.
And then the second challenge is, one of the things we need to get up to speed on right away, very, very quickly, is once they have a big pool of new prospective customers, is speaking to them in the language that's going to get them excited and motivated and enthusiastic about continuing their training. And you touched on three or four of the primary focuses right there. It was, number one, you know, I was so happy to have everybody here. I really hope you learned a lot. It was my pleasure. Now, keep in mind that one day of training does not a black belt make, right?
Right.
And it's a very, very soft, very, 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 very soft sell, like you said. And it's totally totally congruent with what our values are as martial artists. And in fact, again, the biggest problem I think we have is that we completely shy away from asking them to do anything at all. And 50 people walk in, 50 people walk out, and you're left holding, you know, holding nothing but having a great time, which is important. You had a great time, you impacted them, you impacted your community, but, you know, 50 people who maybe half of them or 25% of them would have been great students and would have loved to be students, if you could have given them the internal language, the internal vocabulary to justify to themselves why they should continue training. And that's all it is. So, I mean, that's completely brilliant. That's exactly what it needs to be. So,
well, you know, let me be brutally honest, too. I kind of had to learn that skill myself because I was a victim of that. I mean, we would hold these workshops, and, you know, being a martial artist, your first and foremost duty is to serve the community, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we would get out and hold these workshops, and people would praise us, we'd get testimonials, and they'd walk right out the front door.
Yeah.
You know, and when we changed our system and started, you know, asking them to join, they just simply started joining. So my point is, they will do what you tell them to because you're the expert, or we're the expert. And if you say to them, look, you need to block out the time. You need to set aside the time to learn how to protect yourself. It's not an option anymore. This is what the program is. This is what it costs. Is there a problem with the fee? No, no problem with the fee. Okay, let's get started. That's the way you have to go with it because they're looking to be guided. And if you let them walk in and walk out that door, they're going to look at you like an entertainer. You know, and not a martial arts expert who's here to teach them, you know, how to protect themselves and their family. So it's very important that they ask for that sale and realize that they're the expert and they're going to do basically what you tell them to do.
That's exactly right. That's hugely, hugely, hugely valuable. And, you know, I think it was Peter Drucker, but the analogy I've heard about that is that the average person, the average human being, is walking around their life with their umbilical cord in their hand,
right,
and they're looking for a place to plug it,
right?
And I think put perhaps a little bit more delicately is how you did, is people need leadership. People really want to be, for lack of a better term, they want to be told what to do. They want to be told that if you do X, you'll get Y. And that's why weight loss commercials work on television. That's why every commercial works on television, right? Because
right,
they make it very easy for you to say yes. They make it very easy for you to now look. I heard something last night. One of my guilty pleasures is Gene Simmons' show, Family Jewels, and it's a horrible show. I mean, it's terrible. It's cheesy and it's scripted and it's horrible. But it's supposed to be this reality thing, right? But every now and then, maybe every other show, there's one little lesson that is just worth watching the entire season. And the other night he was I think it might have been a rerun, but he had the chance to ring the bell at the New York Stock Exchange, and I'm sure it was set up. I'm sure the whole thing was staged. But the day before, you know, a couple days before it happened, when they were trying to get the deal set up, he was talking to his managers and his business manager and his partner and all this other stuff. And he said, you know what, I got a great idea. I want to go, you know, down to the stock exchange. I want to ring the bell. I want to do the big, you know, rah, rah, rah thing. And they said, what are you talking about? We can't just call up the president of the New York Stock Exchange. And she said, why not? Only two things can happen. Either one, he says, no one hangs up. Or number two, he says, well, Gene Simmons, okay, well, let's see what he has to say. Right?
Right.
See, I think the average martial arts school owner is afraid to make the phone call. They're afraid to call the president of the New York Stock Exchange, right? They're
right,
afraid to ask the person, well, look, you know, you learned a little slice of what you could learn today. Here's, you know, five or six other things that might be very valuable to you. You know, what do you think? Would you like to do that? And they're afraid for the person to say no. And I think that that's something that you know, is very martial artist of us to take it very personally. But in reality, it's our disservice. Now the second part of that is every new year, and Sam, you know, we had a brief discussion about a similar topic at the Inner Circle meeting. Every January, thousands and thousands and thousands of people flood into the health clubs.
Right.
And every February, thousands and thousands and thousands flood right out again.
Right.
So see now, I take that personally as a martial arts school owner. Is I should have gotten a bunch of those people to enroll in my school, and if I did, they'd still be there 12 months later.
There you go.
See, if I let them go to the health club, I'm doing them a disservice because I know they're going to have an experience that's going to last them about 31 days or 37 days. I think 37 days is the national average right now, right?
Right.
But if they come into my martial arts school, they're going to have an experience that lasts them a year, 18 months, where actually at the end of the thing, number one, they will have actually lost some weight, and number two, they've learned something that'll go with them for the rest of their life, right?
Exactly.
So what you're describing is exactly the same thing. You've created an experience now, number one, that has some initial value for the person, but number two, is a feeder for your regular program. So I think, you know, any and all martial arts school owners who ever do events inside their school have to take this lesson very, very, very seriously. If you're doing an anti-abduction class for kids, if you're doing a confidence class for kids, if you're doing a focus class, if you're doing a birthday party, whatever the case may be, we all too often stop way too short, and we forget that flood of people coming in the door, there should be between 25 and 50% of them who become new students tomorrow, right? And you've got to make that happen for yourself. You're doing them a disservice if they come into the school and you can't help them visualize themselves as a black belt before they leave.
Exactly.
So that's extremely important. So that's very cool. So okay, so that's been a big lead generator for you. What do you think in the last 12 months has been maybe number two, or maybe, you know, whatever the best couple of big marketing hits, big lead generators for your school have been?
Well, you know, the landing pages has been really, really huge, because I also do the same thing for my children class, but I do it from a bully protection workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's working really well. Same concept, you know, use the postcards, put the ad out there, free bully workshop, and then the landing page. The landing page is key. Like you said, you got to have that emotional draw or that pull on those pages. If not, they're just going to look at it and click away. So that's been huge for us. With bullying is all out in the media right now. If you go on Oprah.com, I think there's like maybe a 10 or 16 page story on bullying. And, you know, just mention Oprah's name and
yeah,
mention bullying, and people are flocking. So that's been huge.
That's
so outside of that, summer camp, we've been fortunate to have a pretty strong summer camp, but we've built that really from face-to-face, pounding the pavement, you know, with people talking about, you know, offering an alternative to just daycare, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's been pretty huge for us, and that's been strictly through postcards and the students in the school. So if I have to say anything, it's just landing pages and getting out here pounding the pavement. I mean, it's tough economic times, and you know what? We're not participating in the bad economy, but our customers are.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we have to get out there and change the perception and let them know that during these times, you need to keep your child focused. In fact, that's one of my headlines. I don't know if I show you at the Inner Circle meeting, but it's one of my headlines, and we got a pretty good draw from that. During these tough economic times, you let us help you keep your child focused.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I could offer anything in terms of helping with children enrollment, would be to hit them and try to reshape their mindset in terms of, during these particular times, you don't want your child sitting home. You don't want your child hanging out with the wrong group. This is the time you need your child in the school during these tough times, because the good and bad and the ugly is peaking right now. So you really need to have them in a martial art program that's going to work on their personal character and develop their character and the fitness level and health and wellness level.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I this is one of the reasons that you know, the Inner Circle group and facilitating with those mastermind meetings is one of my favorite things to do, because it's a lot of really sharp people, and you just mentioned again three or four really important fundamental marketing concepts that if you're not doing right now, you're really, really struggling. And number one was, it's a combination of entering the conversation that a prospect's already having in their mind anyway,
mm-hmm,
and helping them justify spending money now during this economy. and this is huge, during our upcoming conference, we're going to be talking about how fundamentally this market has shifted and how we're seeing that the average consumer, right now in the United States, the average personal savings ratio is up by over 800%,
wow.
Which means people still have money. They're saving it. They're putting it. They're paying down credit card debt. They're paying down. Credit card companies are going blind right now, trying to figure out how to stay in business because number one, people are paying off their credit card debt, and number two, they're refusing to use their credit cards. Right? They're refusing to use high leverage debt like that. And anyway, to make a long story short, we call it pointing out the pink elephant in the room.
Gotcha.
And I think we talked about this, for about an hour or so at the Inner Circle meeting, and pointing out the pink elephant in the room in any sales process, anytime you're in a persuasion cycle, if someone has something on their mind, if they have a buried objection, if they have an objection that they're going to say anyway, if you're the first one to point it out, if you're the first one to address it, and you address it appropriately, then you win. But if you ignore it, if you don't point out that objection, then they're now totally skeptical of everything you ever say. So, for example, the economy is exactly what you just said. So if you don't give a prospect a reason to justify spending money right now, they won't do it.
Right.
And here's the extreme, and I think sometimes it's useful to take it outside of the martial arts industry. Let's look at it from a 40,000 foot in the air perspective. Gucci is having a horrible year, but Juicy Couture is having a great year this year, and they're both premium brands. Gucci is more premium probably, but here's the difference in the marketing strategy. See, the difference so far has been that the upscale mom who drives the BMW, she still wants the Gucci or the Juicy purse, right? She still wants it. But what she's afraid of is if she goes out and buys it, and then one of her friends sees that she bought it, one of her friends is going to say, oh, my God, how could you possibly spend that much right now since the economy is so bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what she's thinking. That's why she's not going to buy it. It's because she can't later justify it logically to her friends, right? Now, Juicy has very sophisticatedly figured out how to wiggle themselves into that niche by if you look at some of their marketing, which I unfortunately have to because number one my wife is a fan, and number two is I'm always paying attention to how premium products are marketing themselves, like Rolex and anybody who has a premium price product, I want to know how they're marketing it because it's very useful for how we market our schools, and what they've been able to do is to use sort of this envy thing to their advantage. And their basic marketing pitch is right now is that this is the bag that you can justify. You can't justify the Gucci one, but you can justify this one because it's not quite as expensive, and we're gonna we're donating X dollars per purchase to this fund, right?
Right.
So see, now they have an altruistic logical motive. So if Sally down the street says, oh my gosh, how could you possibly have spent $700 on that purse? She can say, well, I know what you mean. It was something I really wanted, but really, they donated like 25% of my purchase over to this foundation, and I really wanted to support the foundation, and this is how I did it. You see, so they're very sophisticated approach, and it's exactly what you're saying. We have to be pointing this out. We have to be giving them a reason to want to invest in something right now, and it's a great motivator. So that's hugely hugely important. I mean that's fantastic. That's like three writer downers all at one time. Let me ask maybe one more question, and this is a little bit of a tangent from marketing, but I think something that school owners really really struggle with, and I think that there's a couple of different tiers of how they progress through this, and what I want to talk about is the fact that you have five children. Is that right?
I actually have three.
Oh, you have three. Okay, you have three children, and so you have a big family,
right.
and you operate now two schools, and I think many people never It's kind of a very emotional thing for many school owners. Is they love the arts, they love the style, they open the location, they get some students, and just as suddenly as all that happened, the school completely consumes their entire life. They're, you know, out into the market marketing in the daytime, they're teaching classes all night, they go home at 11 or 12 o'clock at, you know, in the evening, and the next day starts, you know, 6 hours later, right? 8 hours later. And day by day by day, week by week by week, month by month by month goes on, and they realize that the people that matter the most, their family, their friends, you know, completely get neglected because this business can be all-consuming. And I think that this, you know, I have the utmost respect for what you've accomplished in your career, and I think you're a great example for a lot of school owners who maybe haven't figured this out yet, that the business is supposed to serve you as much so as you serve the business, and in fact more so than you serve the business. So how have you been able to manage that? How have you been able to manage, you know, having a family life and having, you know, three children and all the things, and you have several other businesses that you're operating at the same time. You have some self-defense product businesses and some personal protection service businesses and things like that. How are you able to accomplish all of this and still sort of balance all that?
Well, I'll tell you what, again, I was a victim of not being able to do it. I think after, you know, 20 years of being with the same woman and she dealt with entrepreneur all that time, I guess it got to the point where it became overwhelming. But we actually have our third location. I did want to point that out, Toby, because we just opened our third location a couple of months ago. But back to it, the mistake was I didn't have any business systems. And I was, when you were talking earlier, you were describing me to the letter, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I tell you, I went to a convention and I listened to Michael Gerber, the author of The E-Myth.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. I tell you, his whole, and here's what he said. If you don't create systems for your business, then you don't own a business, you own a job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just fired the government after 15 years, and I thought I was going into my business, and what I was, you know, I was becoming an employee of my business.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, I went home, and I'm telling you, I must have sat down and probably written about 250, 300 pages of systems.
Mm-hmm.
From everything from when you unlock the door in the morning, what's supposed to take place. Turn the heat on a certain temperature. The building should look this way. The bag should be put up that way. The van should be parked this way. The look of the school should be this way. The bathroom should be cleaned at this time of the day. I mean, just every little thing from marketing systems to soft, what they call soft systems and hard systems. Soft systems being the interior of the schools, hard systems being the exterior of the school, how the exterior of the school should look, the grounds of the school, every little thing, when the deposits should take place, how the colors you should wear every day in terms of the staff. So between putting those systems in place so I could step back and look at the business from the outside and focus more on the marketing and promotion of the business, and staff, and then developing a staff too, because at first it was just me. You know, I had like 10 hats like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I started giving those hats away, and that was tough. It was really tough to turn over the accounting, you know what I mean, and tell someone else, okay, you can count my money now. And then going from that to turning over other aspects of the business. But the bottom line is, really had to master, you know, the art of delegation and realize that I wasn't the expert in all areas. I'm good at martial arts. I believe I'm good at martial arts. And there's other people out there that's good at web design. There's other people that's good at accounting. They're good at all these other areas. So we just had to, you know, get to a point where I was able to let those systems go and then kind of just let the business run strictly off systems. My staff is required to have the systems with them at all times because I hit them with a pop quiz at any minute.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But that, I tell you what, that's it. That my school literally just blossomed after that. I mean, from the time I put the systems in place, my stress level went down. I was able to spend more time with my family, you know, do some of the things I enjoy doing, because we get so caught up. I'll tell you what, as entrepreneurs, we get so caught up chasing those goals and chasing the dollar, and we think we're going to get to some destination,
mm-hmm.
only to realize that the glory is in the process. You know, it's having that quarterly vacation. You know, there's no such thing as an annual vacation to me. I mean, I take vacation when I feel like taking vacation. If I want to take vacation every month, I take vacation every month. So I think we need to realize that, you know, even though, yeah, we're chasing this dream, we're chasing our ultimate goals, we have to enjoy the process at the same time and find that balance. You know, it sounds easier said than done, but I'll tell you what, I didn't have a choice because I have two teenagers.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, if you don't give them the attention they need, somebody else will, and you know what I mean about that. So,
yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, that's basically it. I don't know if I covered everything.
No, I think you did. And here's what Michael says in the book as well. And in fact, if you haven't read the book, this is a mandatory. If you're
right.
A small business owner, you have to read Gerber's E-Myth.
Please.
And in fact, I think E-Myth is out of print. I think now it's E-Myth Revisited is the name of the book. Yeah, exactly. And in fact, I had read, I think we may have talked about this. In fact, I had reread that now for probably the sixth or seventh time here just a few weeks ago. And it's really, really, really worth your time. But another thing that Gerber says in the E-Myth, which is exactly what you're describing, is his phrase for it is, operate your business like a franchise, even if you have no intention of franchising your business.
Mm-hmm.
Which means the one of the things that franchising brings to the forefront of your mind is completely non-personality driven businesses, right? When you go to Subway, you know, nobody goes to Subway to see the guy, the franchisee, or the guy who makes the sandwich, right? They go to Subway because they want a Subway sandwich. When they go to Quiznos, they don't go there to see the guy who's going to make the sandwich. They want the sandwich. They want the product. They want, you know, that experience of going to that restaurant. When they go to Ruth Chris, you don't go there necessarily to see your favorite waiter. You go there because you're going to get the Ruth Chris steak, right? Well, in martial arts schools and in virtually every other small business, it's the opposite of that. The business exists, and the business is successful because you're there, because they're going to see Master Sam,
right?
Now, you got to fix that. And if you don't fix that, then as soon as you go away, the business goes away.
Exactly.
Or as soon as you take a vacation, the thing tanks. Or as soon as you know, exactly. So what you're describing is, you know, the most important lesson that any martial arts school owner, any small business owner can ever have is, if it depends on your personal activity, you don't have a business. You have a job. You own your own job, and that's fine if that's what you want. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But don't delude yourself into thinking that you own a business. What you own is your own job.
Exactly.
And it's brilliant. I mean, Gerber's E-Myth is an absolute prerequisite if you want to get into business.
Absolutely.
And perhaps the last lesson from E-Myth that would be useful to talk about is, Gerber talks about the three fundamental different personalities that you have as a small business owner. You have three different human beings that live inside you. You have the technician,
right.
You have the manager, and you have the entrepreneur. And the technician is the guy who is really good at doing the thing. He's the guy who's the great instructor and the person who's really good at talking to the parents and the person who's really good at communicating the benefits. And then you've got the manager who keeps all the balls rolling and makes sure that people follow systems and that sort of thing. And then you've got the entrepreneur who is the visionary.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, all three of these personalities are always at odds with each other. And depending on which one you spend the most time with, that limits your success. So if you spend 90% of your time being the technician, your success is severely hamstrung.
Oh, yeah.
If you spend more time being the manager, your level of success is expanded, but not where it could be. If you spend most of your time and focus being the visionary entrepreneur, your success is almost limitless. So I you know, it's a hugely valuable lesson and certainly something that again, if you were to paint a picture, you would probably be one, you know, your profile would probably want to be one of the least likely profiles to be a hugely successful entrepreneurial school owner, right? Number
right.
one, you teach a wacky style,
right?
Right.
Sure.
And I mean, absolutely no disrespect. I love
right,
Amaguru
right.
Rafi. I mean, he's a great, I mean, but I mean, you're doing stuff with like handcuffs and whips and,
right.
I mean, you know, this is the type of stuff you're doing, right?
Right,
so this
right.
is not what most people would consider to be a mass marketable thing. But it doesn't matter. The style is irrelevant. So let's go through all of the things working against you. You know, if I'm a school owner and I have some lingering excuse in my psyche for why I can't be successful in my school or for what obstacles are against me, here are your obstacles. You teach a wacky, eclectic style,
right.
which is very technical, very difficult to teach, very difficult to understand, very difficult. How long does it take to get a black belt in your school? Or the equivalent there?
I think I'm at about 6 years.
Yeah, about. I can fix that. I don't know what happened there, but I can fix it. Master Scott, are you still there? Okay, hang on. I need to unmute you somehow. How do I do that?
There we go.
Master Scott, are you there? Okay, good. Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there. Anyway, I was in the middle of a sentence. Let me think if I can remember. Okay, so you teach a very technical style. It takes 6 years to earn your black belt, not 3 years like, you know, some of these guys, right? So you have very difficult, very technical, very eclectic style. You have multiple locations, right, which is,
yeah.
Again, some people perceive that to be a difficulty. Well, you're African-American man, right?
Right. Right.
So again, not the model of huge opportunity laid in front of you. Your family background was very humble, right? You
exactly.
didn't come from the Rockefellers, right?
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So I mean, I'm not sure if there's a stereotype or if there's an obstacle that you didn't have. In comparison to, well, your demographic. The demographic you started off in was kind of, you know, questionable, right?
Right, exactly.
You're dealing with relatively high crime areas in some of those places and things like that. So, I mean, again, I you know, you're a great example. If I'm a school owner and I have some lingering internal dialogue that says, well, the reason I can't, you know, have 300 students or the reason that I can't be financially successful is because of X.
Right.
Well, you've broken that bolt. So there's no excuses, right? Go get the e-myth, read the e-myth, and think very seriously about what the systems in your business look like, and that'll dictate what your business looks like. So that's extremely valuable, I think. Well, Master Scott, thank you so much for your time. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you spending all this time with us. And again, you know, one of my new favorite things in the world to do is to spend time with our Inner Circle members and to sit in that room with, you know, 15 or 20 really, really sharp school owners is always a very exciting thing for me. It's always amazing what comes out of that. And we're excited to see you at our conference at the end of the year and all of that stuff. So thank you again so much for taking your time.
Oh, yeah, thank you so much, Tobin. I can't get off the phone without giving you guys a plug because, again, it was NAPMA that actually was the turning point for Full Circle in 1994, 1995.
Sure.
So, again, thank you guys for the wonderful job that you all are doing. And now with Master Oliver on the scene, I tell you, for the folks that don't know Master Oliver, look, I'm telling you right now, this man is going to take and change the face of martial arts, school owners, and the image of martial arts. There is no doubt. I've been to his boot camps. He knows what he's talking about. And I tell you, he has one of the best teams with you and Mark and the other guys. So,
mm-hmm.
like I said, I just anything that I can do to help NAPMA in his goals, I'll be more than willing to help out.
Well, we really appreciate it. It's going to be a very exciting, 24, 36 months in the martial arts industry, and our goal is what you said. You know, our goal really is to help. Really bring this industry into the level, you know, to give it the level of broad market appeal and broad market respect that many, many other industries like the Sylvans and the Kumans and the Learning Centers have.
Right.
That's really our focus, is really to make what we do like a Starbucks version rather than the, you know, McDonald's version, right? We want to be the high quality, high level of service, personal service industry. So we're really excited about that. But anyway, thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Thank you, sir.